The opinions expressed here on the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast are solely those of the presenters, not the opinions of Cedarbrook Community Church or Mountain View Community Church.
Hi, this is Stefan Vaz with Streetlights in Athens, Greece, and you are listening to the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast with Steve Allison and Matthew McKay.
And we're back, episode 72 of the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast.
Hey everyone, I'm Matthew McCabe.
And I'm Steve Anderson.
We are the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast, and we're helping youth workers to keep going.
This episode is sponsored by ServeHQ. Stop using clunky and unsafe communication tools in ministry. With a new tool from ServeHQ, your email and text announcements can live alongside your team chats in one unified platform that's built just for churches with ease and accountability at the forefront. Go to servehq.church to find out more.
Here we are, Steve, on episode 72, part two of our volunteer series.
Yeah, dude, I am still cracking up about the fact that you were the PTA president.
Oh, man. That, you gotta
that just humors me to no end.
Why does it humor you to no end?
It's
not exactly, you don't see me as a PTA president.
Actually, I can totally see you doing that because you're like a super volunteer, but there's just something about the stereotype of PTA president.
Yeah.
I picture like big hair, you know, like
you should have seen my hair back then.
Super soccer mom.
Right.
Minivan driver. I picture Sandra Bullock in Blindside.
Blindside. Yes.
That's who I picture for the PTA president.
I can
or
see
Dolly
that.
Parton.
I can see that. I can see that.
You don't look like either of them.
No,
at all.
I understand that. No, when we moved into the area and got involved at that school, and we moved from a different part of this area to that area, got involved in that school, we wanted to be involved. So we joined the PTA. We were at the meetings, we were meeting people that we wanted to meet, non-church people. And
did you get elected the meeting you weren't there?
No, it's not
I
true.
I volunteer that Matthew McCabe, he's not here today.
Right, exactly. And we served in a couple different ways in the PTA. We did. Okay. We ran a fundraiser event for them once. And so we were doing that kind of stuff. But then it came to that time. And it was a small PTA. The school did not have a real high level of parent engagement. And so it came to a point where there just was no one. I mean, it was going to shut down. There was going to be nothing. And it just was, okay, I'll step in. I'll do it.
Good for you.
And I jumped in, and I was the PTA president for 2 years.
Did they send you to PTA president training?
No!
Did you go to the National PTA
No.
President's Conference or anything?
No. I was handed a manila
Online
folder.
Online course? Or?
I was handed a manila folder with a bunch of papers and forms in it. That was the extent of what I was equipped to do.
Nobody
and
helped you out?
No. I mean, the president from the year before said I could contact them, email them or call them.
Oh, yeah, right.
And I did, and she did help me out a couple of times when I was like, so what's this form? Why are they yelling at me that this isn't in? Because it's just a bureaucracy. I love parent-teacher involvement. I think that's a great thing.
Right.
But this organization has gone off the rails. I mean, I literally spent, I believe I spent better than 50% of my time as the PTA president filing paperwork.
Okay.
And I thought, when do I get to help my kids and their teachers? Like, it was super frustrating.
See, you need to teach the course on being PTA president and things will be better.
I wanted to start a whole different organization that was outside of the National PTA because it was, anyway, I digress. But
all
it
right.
was not a, it it was a fine thing to do, but because of the bureaucracy, it was not a pleasant experience.
It was not a highly rewarding volunteer experience.
No. It took me a year to figure out what I was doing, and then I could do it for a year, and then my time was up.
And you were out.
And I was out.
Which
and
is what out. We don't want yes. to happen.
We do not want that
in
to
our
happen
youth ministries,
to our
right?
youth ministries. We talked a bunch last week about how to, recruit a team and get a bunch of people, but we want to keep those people around. We don't want them to be talking like I'm talking about being the PTA president.
Remember
when I was a youth leader at that one church? Man, it was terrible.
Yeah, so that's going to be our episode today.
But before we do that, It is time for
Sherpas.
Say what?
People are weird.
I agree 100%, but where are you going with this?
People are just, they're just flat out weird. So there's been a new Guinness World Record set.
Oh boy.
How do people even come up with these categories?
I don't know.
A South African man broke his own Guinness World Record for staying in a barrel atop a pole for 78 days.
Can you read that again?
Yeah, a guy broke his own record by staying in a barrel atop a pole for 78 days.
I have so many questions.
Vernon Kruger descended from the 82-foot pole in Dullstroom, South Africa, after spending 78 days, 23 hours, and 14 minutes in the 132-gallon barrel at the top of the pole. He was airlifted from his perch via helicopter. He first set the record in 1997 when he spent 67 days in a barrel fixed to a pole. And this time he stayed in the barrel for 11 extra days to make sure that his record could not easily be broken.
Okay.
Why?
Again, I have questions.
Why?
Yeah. First of all, why is that a category in the Guinness Book of World Records?
I don't know. Who puts a barrel on a pole?
I don't know.
And I've never even seen a barrel on a pole.
No.
Why would you get in it?
Why would you get in it?
Why would you live up there for almost
three months? 78 days to spare?
I just wonder, did he just pee like over the side of the barrel? What? I have so many questions.
There's so many. You know what? I think we should move on because this is actually blowing my mind right now because I can't even, I have no box for it or barrel for it.
Well, okay, Vernon. Well done. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
You are my hero.
You will live in Guinness World Record lore for years until somebody decides to stab there for 80 days.
Except you're insane. Anyway.
Anywho's.
So today we're going to talk about leading our volunteers as youth workers.
We recruit them, and now we lead them.
Yeah. And this is a huge category.
Oh,
I mean, it could be a whole podcast series, probably.
Exactly. It'd be its own podcast.
Yeah, it could. but we're going to condense in a little bit today and just give you some things to think about. So go ahead.
What's the first thing we got to do in leading a team?
When I think of the team, I think of building the team and the framework for the team.
Okay.
It's not just a bunch of individuals. I want a team. I want a team of people that has a goal, has a unified vision, is working together towards something, has an expressed strategy for achieving that. And so I want to set us up for, you know, for winning the big game. I want to set us up as a team with a purpose.
Sure. So there is a lot of work that goes into the individual leader, and we'll get to that in the episode. But you got to start with, how do we take these individuals, bring them together, and give them one unified vision? This is why we're here. This is why we signed up. This is what we're going to do.
Yeah. This is what great coaches do, right? They bring their team together, and they're painting a picture of what they can achieve together. They can achieve together what they can't achieve separately.
Correct.
So we have a ministry vision statement. We have some core essentials. We have a strategy that we use to multiply ourselves and the lives of students. And I share all that with the leaders on a regular basis because I want them to remember why we're doing this in the first place.
Yep.
And that we're doing it together.
Yeah, and you can cast that vision when you're recruiting them and you're bringing someone on. You've got to give an idea of what you're inviting them to. But I know that, like, in my context, every year at the beginning, so end of August, just before we're getting ready to launch, we would sort of have a big meeting where we'd come together, and there was one purpose to that meeting. Was to eat really good food. Well, that's and we'll get to that.
Right.
That was important. But the one reason is to recast the vision, big picture. What are we about as a ministry? What did we call you to? What are we asking from you? Because it feeds this vision. And then secondary, okay, this school year, here's going to be where we're hoping to go in the next 9 to 10 months. And so, let's all get on the same page.
Right.
And that was huge for our ministry.
Because the weekly grind is part of the bigger vision. And if you don't remember what the bigger vision is, or you've never been called to something bigger than that, the weekly grind
is just that.
It's going to feel like a grind.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's going to burn us out, burn our volunteers out. a part of that vision casting is it creates a language that we share, you know, certain terms, phrases, mission that we all know what we're talking about then. So when we have meetings, we can use this common language, and it describes, you know, the culture of our youth ministry. And I think it keeps everybody on the same page.
Yep, yep. And it's important to bring the team together too, because to be unified towards a vision, you have to know each other. And yeah. if we're constantly adding new members, which right. hopefully we're always sort of refreshing new people into the thing, they need to get to know each other. And so that meeting we would have in August was also a relational meeting. It was right. a time to make sure we all know each other and love each other and are ready to just go to war for this vision.
Yeah.
So you gotta build the team. Start with building the team.
Okay. So we've recruited the team, and we're building this unified vision and strategy and language around what we are about as a youth ministry. So the next thing is to equip them to be able to do this well.
Right. You know, if you're a coach, how do you equip your team? Well, you teach them the skills they need to be successful.
The fundamentals.
The fundamentals. We put fun in fundamentals.
Work on your left-handed layups again and again and again.
Exactly. Yeah. So we've got to equip them. We've got to train them on how to do it. Again, as the main youth leader, this is what we do. Mm-hmm. This is our life. This is what we're called to. And so for a lot of us, it comes natural. But most of us have given some time to think critically about it. We've gone to trainings. We've read books. Mm-hmm. Maybe we went to college and got a degree. I mean, not me, but other people have done that, right? So we've pursued actual skill training to be well at this. These are volunteers. Right. They have lives and jobs, but we're asking them to do the same thing we're doing, so we have to give them the tools.
So I think it's good to step back and kind of create your list of specific skills that you want everybody in your ministry to have, and then have a plan for teaching them how to do those things. I mean, there's just basic things. How to lead a small group.
Yep.
You know, maybe how to have a difficult conversation. Yep. How to pray for kids. I mean, there's a thousand.
How to connect with kids.
Yeah.
I mean, I know at one point in time I did a training for our youth leaders, and I gave them a list of questions, just simple questions that they could ask that would engage conversation beyond the surface conversation.
Yeah.
And I had a couple of people come up a month later and say, this is gold. I mean, I took it from a book that was on my shelf. I mean, I didn't make this stuff up. But it was to them. It was earth-shattering because that wasn't a natural skill set that they had to just have casual conversation that pulled a little deeper. And so just to give them a tool that gave them that, just it transformed them as a youth leader.
Just a quick shout out, Download Youth Ministry has something called DYM University.
Yeah.
They have a series of like 10-minute videos from youth ministry legends sharing specific skills. And we have offered that. We bought the package and offer it to our volunteers. They can do it online at their own pace. And we've offered a little bit of incentive if they complete certain levels of the course.
Really?
Yeah, for real.
That's a great idea.
It's so easy. So check that out, downloadyouthministry.com. Check out DYM University.
Yeah.
One thing that I've really been challenged on for myself, because it doesn't come naturally to me, is to be really professional and intentional about getting the volunteers what they need.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, I've been in youth ministry for so long, like you said, live and breathe it. I just take for granted certain abilities and skills, like the wing it ability.
Yeah.
You have the wing it ability?
I do have the wing it ability, yes.
Someone hands you a bunch of questions 3 minutes before your small group, you can probably lead the group,
I will probably
right?
lead a fairly effective small group.
You could probably lead it without the questions.
I probably could. In fact, I might throw the questions away and just go on my own. Right, because it's a natural skill for me. And not only a natural skill, it's something I've honed over 30 years.
Right. But all of our volunteers don't have that comfort level.
Right.
They're stepping into this, and they may not have the experience, or they're nervous about it, or they don't really trust their own judgment or their experience in it. And so I've been trying to improve at doing really well by them.
Yes.
So, you know, by Wednesday, Thursday, make sure they have the questions for this coming Sunday. Communicate about what the series is about or what we're teaching next month. You know, communicate.
So they know what's going on.
Yeah. One little thing we do is every Sunday night in our high school group, we have a 10-minute stand-up meeting right at the beginning. I get everybody in the room because I can't get them in there early because a lot of them are driving students and stuff. So we meet for 10 minutes really quickly. We go over the night, what's expected of them, answer any questions they have, pray together, send them
disperse.
Back out. Yeah, yep. Short, sweet, but at least brings us together, unifies our
vision. Yep, help build that team.
Yeah, and then equips them a little bit,
right,
and sends them back out into the mob.
Yep. But I think you're really touching on something important here about getting information to them, information mm-hmm. they need, small group questions, the passage, the topic, what's my vision for Sunday night or Wednesday night or Sunday morning or whatever it is, where am I trying to go?
Right.
So they have time to process that. And I know that, again, because I have the winged ability, because I have the years and years of practice, repetition of doing this, it comes so easy for me that I can forget that it doesn't for them. And I remember a season that there was a youth leader who, if I didn't have the email out with the here's the passage we're going to launch from, here's the small group questions, here's where I'm trying to go in my message, here's where I'd like you guys to go if the conversation can get there in small groups. If I didn't have that out by a certain time, this person was on my case. And and I was getting frustrated until I remembered, wait,
yeah.
No, I'm the one I should be frustrated with because yeah. I'm not equipping them to be successful if I'm pushing later and later in the week my preparation, which I have the flexibility to do.
Right.
Whether I prepare the message that I'm going to give on Sunday night on Tuesday or Wednesday or Friday doesn't matter to my schedule. I can right. make that happen. But it matters to the person who works 50 hours a week and has certain windows of time mm-hmm. to prepare to be effective on Sunday night. So, man, I think you are hitting the nail right on the head. We've got to be better.
It just a little hack. I often send the questions before I've written the message.
Ah.
Because I am a natural procrastinator.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'll send the questions out. And then, I mean, I'm already thinking about what the message is, but I haven't actually written it yet.
Yeah, but you know where you're trying to go, which is usually enough to get the questions.
And if I need to adjust a question before the weekend, I can still do that. But yeah. But what I think that does is I think it builds value in people. It shows them that you are not just taking them for granted, but that you care about them feeling like they're valued and important and prepared.
Right.
And I think that's really important yep. for us to remember mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. That person who was always on me actually communicated those, and that was what it turned yeah. the corner for me. Because when that person communicated to me, I don't feel like you value my input in what's happening on Sunday night. When you don't give me enough time to yeah. prepare for it. And that was what,
that's
I mean,
fair.
I just cut right through the heart. And that person was 100% correct, because when I procrastinate, I devalue their input in the group, which is 100% the opposite of what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to invite them into a bigger role in what we're doing. And by not being prepared, I'm pushing them to a smaller role.
I mean, it's really just the golden rule, right? I mean, do you love it when your senior pastor, not that he would do this, but if he would come to you, you know, on Friday and be like, hey, I need you to do this thing by Sunday. I'm giving you 2 hours to think about it.
It wouldn't feel good.
No, it doesn't
feel good.
Like,
good at all.
He's not valuing your own management of your time and so forth. So it's just a thing to really be intentional
Absolutely.
About.
Yeah. And again, the equipping of the skills. There's mm-hmm. so many tools. You talked about DYM University. Mm-hmm. You know, there's books. I've gone through certain books. There's ad nauseum amount of books on youth ministry.
Right.
And I've taken a few of those and bought a copy for everybody in the youth
yeah.
ministry. And we took a year to work through it and
We've
met every month
too.
And do that. There's all kinds of stuff online, conventions, seminars, you know, bring somebody in. There's so many different ways that you can better equip your team to be more effective.
I would just finish off this section by saying that it's really good to step back before the year begins and kind of plan your entire leader equipping strategy for the year.
Yeah.
Because, again, that's placing value on it. It's making it a high priority, which it really should be one of the highest priorities. And so when you can really plan that whole year ahead, it helps me out. And I think it lends value to the whole thing. So
All right, so we've recruited a team, we've built the team, we've equipped the team. We have to care for the team.
We do.
We really have to. And this is no small thing. This idea of shepherding, pastoring, caring for those that we have recruited to be a part of our team.
It's really easy to fall into the pattern of using people.
Mm-hmm.
It's really easy to use people to build the thing that we care about.
Yep. I hear you. I hear what you're saying.
And it doesn't feel good when you are being used in that way.
Yeah.
We're not widgets in the church machine, right? None of us want to be treated like that or be made to feel like that. And yet, I know that I've done that.
Sure.
As the primary leader, because we have this big vision of student ministry, what we want it to be, and people can't always live up to our expectations. And so I have to remember, these are real people, and I truly do care about them, and they're more important to me as people than as parts of the program.
Yeah, that's huge. That's huge. This whole idea of, you know, there's always a relational aspect to student ministry, both with the students and with our leaders. We want to be relationally connected. So taking your volunteers out for breakfast or lunch or meet them for coffee or do something with them is a wonderful thing, and it's a very important thing. But I have been challenged by this idea of when that happens, if the only thing we talk about is the youth group or the youth ministry, then I am probably using that person as a widget in my machine as opposed to truly caring for them as a human being, as somebody who has struggles and joys and frustrations.
And a spiritual life outside of youth group.
And a spiritual life outside of the message I'm going to teach on Sunday night.
Yeah. Think about the hypocrisy that we display if all we talk about is, oh, we're a relational youth ministry. We want all of our students to feel loved and shepherded and cared for and known by name. And then we treat our volunteers like parts of
a
the machine.
Yeah.
How bad is that?
That's not good at all.
Oh, my gosh. I'm convicting myself.
Yeah,
as I speak.
Soul care. Just caring about who they are as a person and where their soul is at, where their walk with God is at, is huge, and will pay incredible dividends in the ministry for sure.
Produce longevity.
But we have to care for them as people, not just as parts of the thing we're building.
Yeah, I think of it in terms of two G's, grace and gratitude.
Those are two really important things.
Grace in the sense that this is our life's work. This is what we think about 24/7. It's not theirs. And so when things come up, family conflicts or things interrupt their schedule, they're not able to be at this retreat, or they can't make it to youth group this weekend, have some grace with that. I mean, they've got lives. They've got families, jobs, things pressing on them, pressures.
Sure.
Have grace with that and just let them live their life and encourage and follow up with them afterwards, right? If they can't be there.
They can't be there. Why couldn't they be there? Something's happening. Something's going on.
Yeah.
Kind of dips back into that soul care. Let's get to the root of what's going on. Can I help with anything? Can I,
Yeah, and don't make them feel guilty
for
what they can't do.
Guilt is...
That's such an easy thing to do.
So bad. So bad. So bad.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this before, but I have one youth leader. She's a young mom. She's 27. She's already got 3 kids under the age of 5.
Woo. That's the life
she
right there.
She is a dear, dear person. A lot of things come up. I get texts on Sunday, hey, one of my kids is sick. I can't make it in tonight. Well, I remember what it was like when I had little kids at home, and that happens. That's difficult. And she's got to take care of her family first and spend time with her husband and make sure that she's healthy at home and has time with her family. It's not about her always being here. And so I just want to be gracious with her and help her to feel valued and included. And she's great when she's here, and be gracious when she's not.
Right. Yeah.
And that's a story that could be told, a thousand times.
A thousand over. Different times. Yeah. The guilt thing that you touched on, I think, is an important thing, because You know, nobody loves guilt more than the church, right? And so, so we have to be careful about that. And so I remember that I will make deals with my volunteers, you know, where, look, I'm going to ask the world of you. Mm-hmm. I'm calling you to something really big here. Mm-hmm. We're really building something here. So I am going to ask the world of you. And I want you to give me permission to ask the world of you. But I'm giving you permission to say no.
Yeah.
Giving you permission to say, I'm sorry, I can't do that, or I can't be at that, and that I'm going to have grace for you. And then I tell them, if you ever feel like I am bringing guilt upon you for saying no, I need you to call me out, because I will probably default to that if I'm not in a really good place.
Good.
And I don't want to be there. So help me not be there. I want this to be a place that's guilt-free.
Yeah. And the flip side of guilt is gratitude.
Gratitude.
Right? Just be grateful. We just had a retreat last weekend. My leaders were awesome. They were all in for the weekend. And it was a great weekend, but it demanded a lot.
A lot of everyone.
Right? And so I was so grateful for their presence there. We were able to do things because of so many coming and committing to it, that if we hadn't been able to do that, the retreat would have been a flop. So I've been meaning to. I had a tough week last week, but I've been meaning to write a thank you note to each one of them, a personal, here's something I appreciate about you, you know, not just a form letter.
Right, right, yeah.
Because I just think people need strokes.
Yep. They need to know that what they're doing matters.
It matters to us.
Matters to us, and it matters to students.
And
to
that we see it, and that we appreciate it, you know, especially, I mean, for you and I, because we've been in this so long, people look to us as maybe a little more of an expert or whatever than we really are. So when we give a word of affirmation to somebody associated with youth ministry, it carries a lot of weight.
It does.
People look up to their leaders in youth ministry. They look up to their youth pastors, maybe in ways that we don't even deserve.
And so what we say carries so much more weight than we probably understand.
Yeah. Yeah. People need encouragement.
Yeah.
And we love our youth workers. We want to help them stay in it.
Yeah. There are other ways to express our gratitude, too. Yes, we, you know, handwritten notes and just words of encouragement. These are important things. These are free to give. Mm-hmm. I mean, writing notes takes a little time, but they're free. I mean, they're basically free to give. But we can also express our gratitude towards things. Like, who doesn't love swag, right? I know that when we've done something, not for the youth group, for the youth leaders.
Oh, yeah.
This
definitely.
Is for them. Man, it speaks volume.
If you could budget for it.
Absolutely.
Budget for it, because the budget you spend on youth leaders is going to pay back tenfold.
Absolutely.
Without question. Yeah, we've given some good swag.
Yeah, and incidentally, I've found that it also, you know, if you can thank them in swag, or, you know, even an event. We've taken our youth leaders down to a Nats game, bought a block of tickets. One night there's this sunset cruise on a boat on the Potomac River.
Yeah.
And so we went to dinner, and then we went and did this hour and a half. And it wasn't that it wasn't crazy expensive. People talk about, we did that river cruise 9 years ago, and I still get people that talk about it. It was one of the easiest things I did. Incidentally, these kind of things, swag, taking them to a ball game, you know, taking them out for dinner or whatever, these are also fine recruitment tools, going back to last week.
Yeah. Who doesn't want to be a part of a team that is doing things cool like things. That, where they're appreciated, they're valued, they're equipped.
They're equipped.
And the last thing is that we're having fun together.
Enjoying each other's
company. Playing together.
Playing. Oh, man.
That's so important.
Have you done some fun things just with your youth leaders?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, every year. We've done laser tag. We've done scavenger hunts. We've done retreats. We give away stuff.
Sure.
We feed them at every youth leader training.
Yep.
We feed them.
Feed them the good stuff, right? You don't just order cardboard pizzas like we would do for the youth group. You get them the good stuff, right?
Oh, my gosh, yes. We've had Chipotle. We've had Noodles and Company. We've had Panera Bread. What else?
The good
you
stuff.
You name it,
yeah,
man.
You just...
Panda Express.
They feel valued.
Cafe Rio.
When they know you've put some effort into it.
I'm getting hungry. Going.
I know, me too. If you put some effort into it, you've kind of gone a little bit beyond what you would have to do. You've gone beyond the minimum.
Yeah.
That speaks gratitude into their lives. It speaks value into their lives.
Yeah, there's that great biblical word, lavish, you know? It says that God lavishes his love on us. And I want to lavish appreciation and gratitude and fun on the team that we have recruited and built and equipped, because that creates this healthy camaraderie that ends up spilling out into the lives of students. They see us unified, having fun together, caring for one another. And then they catch that's what this youth ministry is.
They're drawn into
that. These people love each other.
They're drawn
into
that.
And they love me.
Yeah.
I like this place.
Yeah.
That's all part of the package.
And it's so important to go and do, you know, you talked about laser tag. I know we went to a inflatables place one time just with the youth leaders. It's important to do those things that they have to watch students do on occasion. To let them actually go do it sometime.
Yeah.
But that day we went to it was, again, so simple. We went to an inflatables place, which we've done countless times with the youth group. We went with just the leaders, and they just cackled and laughed and played all night and were just like, this is so great. There's no students here to watch
that's awesome.
Or take care of. We're just going to have fun. And I was like, yes.
We took them to Buca di Beppo one time for dinner and to a show. We went to a Christmas concert. Oh, such a good time.
There's so many ways that you can...
Money well spent.
Both enjoy your team, enjoy each other's company, and express their value and your gratitude for them. These kind of things will pay huge dividends, even though they cost money.
Let's say you spend $50 per year on a volunteer.
That's pretty cheap labor.
Think about that. First of all, think about the hours that they are giving up.
Right.
Think about the heart commitment, what we're asking of them in the investment. Think about the value, which is infinite. But also just think about the fact that if you can keep this person and love them and keep them for years, their experience is going to grow, their effectiveness is going to grow. It's going to start to be exponentially greater, all because you did some things along the way. And then you have a team filled with people with 10 years experience, 12 years experience, 15 years experience.
That love each other, that love being around each other, that love to play together and work together.
It's going to just blow your mind what's possible.
Oh, amazing. This episode is sponsored by ServeHQ. Stop using clunky and unsafe communication tools in ministry. With a new tool from ServeHQ, your email and text announcements can live alongside your team chats in one unified platform that's built just for churches, with ease and accountability at the forefront. Go to servehq.church to find out more.
So when you left your role at the PTA, did you leave of your own accord, or were you fired?
No, I left of my, you cannot be the PTA. You cannot even be on the PTA if you don't have any kids at the school.
Oh.
And so my youngest was a fifth grader and graduated to middle school.
Okay.
My time as PTA president just came to a uneventful end.
Okay. You had a term limit.
I did. It was term limits. It's a good thing.
Well, next week, we're going to talk about the unfortunate situation in which you may need to let a volunteer go.
Yeah. So. Or maybe just redirect them. Either way, difficult, hard conversations, but important ones.
All right. Well, that wraps it up for today. Thanks for tuning in. We will be back next week with another episode of the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast.
So until then, Sherpas out.